This is the Mixed Coach Podcast, episode 33. If you stay tuned, we'll be talking about acoustic bass, everything you need to think about when you're recording it, and what you need to think about when you're mixing it.
Welcome to the Mixed Coach Podcast, the podcast dedicated to making your next recording your best recording.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking about acoustic bass this week.
Kevin, I mean, recently in music, there's been a resurgence of the popularity of acoustic bass. Everybody, you know, Adele and Mumford and Sons, and in every style, some acoustic bass tracks turn up. And I mean, it's really getting to the point where, you know, just kind of, you just never know when you're going to, you know, get acoustic bass. And
right.
I was mixing a track the other day. I pulled it up and I said, wow, that's an acoustic bass. That's interesting. You know, it's great. I like it. So from your take on it, what would you do on the tracking side of things for an acoustic bass? So if you were, you know, were tracking an acoustic bass, how would you mic it? What processing would you use? That sort of thing. And then on the other side, when if you were mixing an acoustic bass, what would you do?
Okay. So in this podcast, we'll talk about recording acoustic bass and then mixing acoustic bass.
Yeah.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't notice until you'd mentioned it, but I guess there has been a resurgence of acoustic bass. And I guess I didn't notice because I do a lot of bluegrass, which is almost all acoustic bass. So, but I can tell you this, honestly, acoustic bass is a little bit tricky to get on tape because it's such a big instrument.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a little bit uncontrollable sometimes. Mm-hmm. So acoustic bass, I doubt that any just regular electric bass player could just pick up an acoustic bass and make it sound like it should.
Right.
And it's really hard. I work with some really, really good acoustic bass players. And the thing I've noticed about them, especially bluegrass guys, this is why I love bluegrass guys.
Right.
They are so in tune with how their instrument sounds that they'll spend thousands and thousands and sometimes tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars on some instruments. I mean, I know guys who have sold violins and fiddles for hundreds of thousands of dollars that they play in studio.
Right.
So they don't stop there. One of the cool things about them is they'll go ahead and buy, you know, KM84s or KM54s or... like I've got a bass player buddy, acoustic bass. He carries, he carries two ribbon mics with him, and neither one of them are under 40 years old.
Wow.
One's a DX44, which is the big NBC looking microphone.
The big boy,
it's a big Frankenstein looking mic.
Yeah.
He uses that on the low end.
Okay.
And then he uses another RCA ribbon mic on the top.
A smaller one.
Yeah, it's the square one. It looks like a tiny Frankenstein mic.
Yeah, kind of like a matchbox, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you would think that, you know, ribbon mics on a bass, on an acoustic bass would be a little bit boomy. And sometimes it can be. But we found that, you know, from watching him, because I'm still learning too.
Right.
But from watching him and watching some of the bluegrass guys, and every time I flip through a channel where they're recording bluegrass, I'll notice how they're micing things. But what typically seems to work is like a ribbon mic or a large diaphragm condenser mic, like a U47 works well, even U87s, U67s, something like that, something big and warm, right around the bridge, the part that comes off of the instrument and holds the strings off of it, right around there, usually like dead center of the bridge, sometimes off to one side, and that gives you a lot of the thump and the thud. But a lot of guys, if you notice on some of the jazz stuff, you can hear them, the strings too.
Yeah.
The buzz of the strings where they're holding the
fret noise almost.
The fret. Well, it's flat wound strings, so there's not a lot of fret noise, but you'll hear the wood vibrating a little bit.
I see.
Where it is. So sometimes we'll stick like a KM84 or a small diaphragm condenser on the top end.
Nice.
So what you get when you combine two microphones is phase problems. So
right.
Sometimes, you know, if I think about it, I'll get them to play something kind of percussive.
Right.
Like where they slap the strings. That way you're getting a peak on the high mic or the neck mic, and you're getting a peak on the bridge mic.
Right.
And then you can take a look and say, hey, that needs to be nudged one way as
nice.
A blanket. Or, you know, if you're really thoughtful, you can do that going in, which, you know, that would be good too. So that works. Another thing that we do sometimes is, you know, believe it or not, take a DI off of the bass.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen some really, really good bass players, jazz, bluegrass, and the like, have a real, they usually, if especially if they play loud, they'll usually have a good Fishman pickup or something like that that sounds pretty good.
Right.
And sometimes I'll use that in addition, but there again, you have to be careful about phase things. And make sure that you know, the phase is in alignment, because the low end, that's where the rubber meets the road right there. Your bass is either going to sound good or not, and the bass is almost always mono. So if you're really struggling with the bass, you know, slip it in mono, flip the phaser for a couple of mics, and see if you can get a bigger sound or whatever. And then another thing, believe it or not, about recording bass is, you know, good mic pre's, of course the player, the instrument, right, all that kind of stuff. Good mic pre's, although I'm not one of these sticklers about mic pre's. I do love using high-end mic pre's, but I found that, you know, a decent mic pre works fine. Tube microphones, you know, are make it a little bit thumpier sometimes. But the thing you have to look out for on bass, and it's really kind of a mixing sort of thing, which we'll cover in a second, is filtering. Just make sure that the low end is clean.
Nice.
But let's see. Nice. What else can I tell you about recording a bass?
I mean, so you're saying like a lot of the really good bass players will come with their microphones, and basically you're you know, if you hire a really, you know, great bass player, are you hiring them for their bass and microphones?
Well, or? I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, because there are some really, really great bass players in Nashville,
yeah,
who just bring a bass and they expect the engineer to do everything.
Right.
And that's cool. But it makes me appreciate the guys who come in, and that this is, you know, because I've got, and this is why it's so, and this is a little sidebar, this is why it's so important for guys to tune into podcasts like this.
Right.
And, you know, check out some other great podcasts. I know that Joe over at Home Studio Corners got a great one.
Mm-hmm.
I think Graham Cochran is doing Graham one Cochran. With him. Yeah. Check out those podcasts, too. Those guys, they've done some homework, too. And it's really important that you surround yourself with people that do this kind of thing on a regular basis, because now I'm getting back to my subject. The guys who walk in with their bass and say, here, make it sound good, if you weren't watching the guys who brought all their mics in and said, right, yeah, I've tried 20 different mics on this bass and this one sounds the best, that's something that you can use for the guy who comes in and says, you know, what are we going to put on this bass?
Right.
You at least know where to start.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
definitely. So it's really important that you surround yourself and just keep consuming. Keep watching videos. Keep watching YouTube videos. Keep listening to podcasts. Read books. And probably most importantly, talk to players who have done this. Talk to engineers who've done this before. And most of the guys are glad to give you information. But anyway, when the guy comes in with the bass and says, here, make it sound good, you know where to start.
You know where to start.
I know this mic sounds good on
a large diaphragm ribbon and, you know, a smaller diaphragm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
I'll tell you one other thing I've done, too, and I wish I could find these mics. And if any of you guys know where I can get one, let me know. Or two of them, actually. These were Shure microphones. Okay. And I used these back in when I worked in North Carolina. We recorded a lot of bluegrass there. And I just happened to find two Shure 330s, which they're square ribbon mics, and I haven't seen them but maybe once since. And I had two of them. And this made complete sense to me. I had two mics, and I put one over each F-hole on the bass guitar.
Okay.
Because, and I don't know physically, and some of you guys that know the acoustic instruments better than I do, please chime in and educate me. But I'm thinking that one F-hole, that there's two F-holes, and that different frequencies maybe come out each F-hole. It's just a guess. But the whole face of the bass instrument puts out a pretty consistent sound.
Right.
But when you put a mic over one of the holes, one of the bad things about bass is sometimes the G string will be loud and the D string will be non-existent.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, they'll resonate or something like that. But I took two Shure 330s, which are ribbon mics, and I put one over each hole, and then I summed them together. Of course, they were in phase alignment and all that kind of stuff, because I put them equidistant or the same distance from the hole, mm-hmm, and it was the most even bass tone I've ever recorded. And to tell you the truth, I haven't recorded very many basses since then. So my theory is that if you use two matching microphones, and they could be, you know, 40 33s, feel free to use 57s, anything like that, but try this. put one over each F hole and then sum them together and then see if it's more consistent. Because I would love to try this again.
Yeah.
But I guess it could be a little homework for the guys listening to the podcast. Yeah,
absolutely.
But anyway, okay. Now, as far as mixing goes.
Mixing them.
Okay. So, mixing. I've put a tutorial up on YouTube on how I corrected an electric bass that was doing this, where one string resonated more than the other. And I literally went in and stripped out, I think I stripped out the E string or whatever string that was giving me trouble, and I actually processed it differently.
Nice. So you split it off, put it on a separate track?
Yeah, kind of like we did a couple podcasts ago when we talked about how I take the side stick away from the snare drum.
Yes.
I was taking the problem, instead of like killing it with a compressor or two or three, I was literally just taking the source of the problem out, putting it on another track. And if you cut it and pull it straight down, then you won't hear any edits or anything.
You won't
like
hear
that.
Any. You'll any just know where it'll just continuously go.
Yeah, and bass is consistently played long notes to where you can do that, and it's not too much of a too much of a problem.
Yeah.
So,
but I do know what you're talking about, where like one string, if one string is either fresher or it just didn't wear quite as much as the others have over time, then it'll stand out a little bit more sometimes. And one way, I mean, I've never tried the splitting it off. I've done a parallel compression, but I'm really interested to try out the
two mics.
Literally just splitting it off to where it will be in its own track.
Oh, I see. You know, oh, I
just
see.
Processing
well,
it differently.
Yeah, I would try. I mean, I would definitely try that, but I would move that down the list of
gotcha.
Not the last resort, but because it does take a little bit of time to do that, but it is definitely something that can help you.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, if I can backtrack just for a second.
Yeah.
Sometimes we record the bass, the acoustic bass, so close that it can't help but be resonant because wood is, you know, it's different everywhere you would go. So it would tend to be more resonant in some places. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes if it's resonant, maybe you need to pull the microphone away a little bit. If the bass sounds good at 3 feet and it doesn't sound good at 6 inches, then maybe you should pull the mic more towards the three feet mark.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much, but you can find a sweet spot there. But anyway, you know, several months ago, we were talking about how pre-production helps in post-production.
Yeah.
Same is true for recording acoustic instruments, too. If you put a little bit of homework, talk to some bass players, experiment with some stuff, then hopefully you won't have to do too much work in the
post
stage.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So. That answers my question. And the only other thing I can think of would be compressors. How would you compress it, you know, differently than you would a normal bass?
Not really. No.
Okay.
I typically basses tend to like, in my opinion, to my ear, and from a lot of things I've read, a lot of engineers do this. Typically, basses are around 4-to-1.
Yeah.
They like 4-to-1 ratio, and I would leave enough attack in to make sure that you can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about that on the attack principle. Leave enough attack in to where, you know, you can hear the finger noise of the string actually being plucked, but it grabs the level down enough on the resonant strings. Another thing you could do if you have a resonant bass like that too is you can use a multiband compressor like a C4 or even the Isotope Ozone has it,
right?
Where you can actually find that offending frequency and compress that frequency, kind of like a de-esser, but on the low end.
Right.
That'll work sometimes too in the mix process. But
great.
Anyway, so we've pretty much covered everything I know about acoustic bass. So if you can educate me on something, maybe something you've tried that's worked, be sure to come by the website, mixcoach.com. Look for episode number 33, and we'll be talking about acoustic bass. So see you there. Thanks for coming. Bye.
For a free download of Kevin's video called 5 Things Every Great Mixer Knows, head over to mixcoach.com/freetips.